The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by Exchange Wire.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm your host today, Amy Neal-Terrain, and I'm pleased to be joined by our editorial lead, Matt Broughton. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Amy. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here as always. And today's special guest, Josh Rosson, president of Hotspex Media based in Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Josh. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. I'm doing great.
Good. Yeah, great to have you here. So today we'll be covering the latest going on with Google and the DOJ, the looming social media ban for under 16s in Australia, and Amazon launching a new app to rival Temu and Shein. So let's get into today's stories. So the first one is from Bloomberg. The US Department of Justice has decided to ask a judge to force Google to sell its Chrome browser. Following an August ruling that Google monopolized search, the DOJ may also seek measures addressing AI and Google's Android system, according to sources familiar with the matter. So I'll come to you first, Josh. Is this the beginning of the end for Google? What do you think?
I don't think it's the beginning of the end. I think Google has proven its resiliency. It's not the first time it's been in front of the DOJ nor other platforms. My biggest question as this story is breaking and rolling out, the recourse is unknown, but it's who do they expect to buy it? You know, what is that sticker price going to be for something so valuable, something that dominates 61% of the global search market? Who can afford that wouldn't immediately then create another monopoly? So something we're certainly going to keep an eye out for, especially as it impacts our business in Hotspex Media, a digital media planning and buying agency. You know, we reacted very quickly to the cookie degradation conversation a few years back, built some proprietary tech around contextual advertising to avoid or circumvent the loss of cookies. We'll find a similar path should Chrome go away, but I don't think it's going to disappear so quickly.
Yeah, it definitely impacts the entire ecosystem. And yeah, like you said, it brings up a same situation of who's going to buy that. It'll just be someone else who's going to end up in the same situation, really. Yeah, what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I agree. It's not the beginning of the end, but it's certainly looking like the dragon sat on top of its pile of gold is going to have to give away at least some of its coins. Obviously, we've got the incoming Trump presidency, which has a hell of a load of unknowns around it. But noises out of Washington suggest it may not be as heavy on the recent anti-monopoly action, but also Google may still have to face the music. You know, we've got incoming interim replacements for the FTC. They both have track records against big tech in antitrust cases. The incoming Attorney General, similarly, he has a track record of being highly vocal on these antitrust issues. So it may not be as smooth sailing as Google may have hoped. And yeah, Google is a giant. And while Chrome, Android, and its ad tech stack, they're, you know, really important elements of it, it's not like the DOJ is really, you know, going after either its search platform or YouTube here, which are its crown jewels. So, Meta has proven that in the face of supposedly existential crises, in its case, IDFA, it can pivot. So I think Google will be able to recover. And I think ultimately, you know, if we were to look at, say, Google as being the solar system, it will still be the solar system, even if it loses Saturn. I think it can recover from what will potentially be thrown at it.
I think there's also something to be said for the generational use cases in terms of how people are using platforms and tools like Google. If you look at some of the younger generations, they don't use Google in the traditional way. They don't use the browser in the traditional way either. A lot of it is built into their iPhones. Especially the younger generation, and also limiting it to more Western cultures where Apple's more dominant, but then in other more developing countries and areas of the world, or even, you know, in Asia, larger populations are more on Android. So there's this weird split and divide in terms of use cases of different generations of how they're using, seeking out information, You know, TikTok, which, not to bury the lead into our next topic too much, but TikTok becomes a great place for search for the younger generation. Reddit, even X to a degree, which is a topic I don't really want to cover. Amazon as an example as well. There's a lot of different places that younger generation is turning to seek answers to questions, not just going directly to the browser.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So what do you think the future could look like for Google within 5 to 10 years?
I mean, I think Matt, like, you know, nailed it. I love that analogy. There's a lot of nuggets in there, which is, you know, the dragon sitting on top of its mountain of gold. I think it will still sit on top of a mountain of gold. You know, we sat through the cohorts and the other initiatives that Google tried to push through when they were getting rid of the cookie and then decided, oh, we're actually not doing that anymore. They'll probably just find a way and it will be business as usual and we'll continue operating on Google platforms as we know it.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt? The same again?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, after all the appeals processes are said and done, and that's going to take years and years and years, I will be surprised if it does retain all three out of Chrome, Android, and its ad tech stack in their current states. But equally, given how much, you know, scale Google inherently has and the massive sway it holds with a wide array of industry bodies, whether it's, you know, those focused specifically on, say, advertising with the IAB, or those, you know, in charge of web protocols for the W3C, I think it holds enough sway with those that even if it did have to divest, it would retain some element of control or, you know, oversight over the data that's coming in. You know, a possible scenario would be it could have to get rid of Chrome, but it keeps the full data from Privacy Sandbox. And already in terms of how a lot of those protocols are run, they're run through what's called trusted execution environments. There's only two of those so far, Google itself and Amazon. And we have seen in the past, not to be too cynical, but the big tech companies can have relationships with each other that mean that they retain enough oversight and control into the data. Obviously, Apple Safari being a key example of that. And yeah, I think despite obviously we've had the CMA looking into it in the UK, but Google continues to hold a lot of the keys to that privacy sandbox. And I suspect as many in the industry do, that the user choice mechanism, which it's going to be introducing, it's going to be quite loaded in its favour to retain control of the data, using privacy as a kind of moat to protect their businesses. So yeah, I expect after the appeals processes are done, they're going to lean heavily, as they have been doing over the past 5 years or so, on that user privacy argument to protect their businesses, as even if they do have to divest of certain elements of it.
As we're talking about it, an idea came to mind for me, which is, you know, this notion, I apologize, someone will have to fact check me, but I remember hearing that, you know, AirPod sales on their own would be a successful $100 million company. I imagine that should Google or Alphabet have to divest itself of Chrome, it would just become its own standalone company potentially. Maybe it wouldn't even be sold to somebody else. It would just have to separate itself and completely from Alphabet and, you know, have its own separate board and, you know, P&L and just be completely independent. And with that, it may actually solve a couple problems that the advertising industry is ripe with, which is, you know, driving commodity level pricing, keeping delivery costs low, made for advertising sites where it's skewing behavior in terms of how agencies then bill, how agencies determine efficacy of advertising, how brands look to their agencies and to vendors and partners like us to deliver efficacy or return on ad spend. So maybe if there's now an added cost to access Chrome browser data, it will force, you know, CPMs high, the value of the impression, of the attention of the individuals will actually become more valuable once again, and we may see a little bit of a righting of the wrongs that our industry has developed over the last decade or so.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens now with the DOJ. Let's move on to our next story. So let's look at the social media ban for under 16s that the Australian government is intending to introduce. So a parliamentary inquiry into social media regulation tabled by the Senate on 18th of November has stopped short of recommending the ban. Instead, the recommendations include establishing a digital affairs ministry with overarching responsibility for the coordination of regulation to address the challenges and risks presented by digital platforms, as well as supporting legislation to combat disinformation and misinformation. So I'll come to you first again, Josh. Do you think a total ban of social media for those under the age of 16 is too extreme?
I actually don't think it's too extreme. I have young kids and I see the impact that social media platforms and the algorithm can have on just absolutely sucking them into their devices and hours start to disappear. I think what the argument we have here in front of us right now is around control over people, you know, freedom of expression and speech and time, frankly, is what is on the table. But I think, you know, all you have to do is look at TikTok in North America versus TikTok in China, and how varying the platform is there in terms of the content that it spits out and how the algorithm works there, as a really good use case for how pervasive and damaging it can be.
Yeah, it can, the algorithms that they use are very powerful, especially for people of that age. So yeah, it's quite a big debate. What do you think, Matt?
So I think, you know, that the argument against that viewpoint is obviously teenagers are always going to want to network. They're always going to want to converse, and doing that, you know, forcing them to do that outside of regulated spaces is a bit out of the frying pan and into the nuclear inferno. But I think there does need to be a hell of a lot more oversight and protection for under 16s within these platforms, which obviously makes a total ban not seem that extreme. But I think it needs to be heavily modified so that teenagers can only interact with other teenagers, interact with people they actually know, to protect against a lot of these online harms from receiving random comments, random videos, random things that, you know, under 16s, under 18s, pretty much anyone shouldn't be seeing. But yeah, in terms of the wider report recommendations, it's extremely interesting how the Australian government is looking at, you know, internet communications as a whole. They've discussed the formation of a digital affairs ministry encompassing things like privacy, online safety, and antitrust, which typically have been siloed in separate departments. And, you know, leaning into our previous story, you can use that as a example, as it's allowed these big tech monopolies to thrive behind reductionist legal arguments. So actually having that all encompassed in one department, one division could be extremely interesting. And they're also looking at introducing similar legislation to the EU Digital Services Act. So they are, you know, experimenting with a lot of different ways to protect its citizens from these online harms. I think the slight concern is obviously with Christmas coming up, and they've got a federal election by no later than September next year, this legislation could end up in limbo, which means a lot of these protections, whether it's these social media protections, whether it's the wider looking into online safety, it may end up either being kicked down the can or just being left in legal limbo, which would be a bit of a shame. But yeah, if this legislation does come off, it'll be extremely interesting to see how, you know, how both its citizens, how companies, how everyone reacts to it.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, like you said, there definitely needs to be more safeguarding and regulation. And just coming to you again, Josh, do you think that other countries could follow suit if Australia manages to pass this legislation?
I think they have to. I mean, not to turn this podcast into a geopolitical discussion, but if you look at the state of the world, misinformation and its ability to amplify itself and create chaos and fear at a global level throughout institutions of higher learning where we expect the most educated and most open-minded people to be having conversations like this, but also to be safe places to have conversations like this, they're eroding, and they're eroding at the speed of the algorithm, at the speed of how many likes somebody can get. So I think, you know, to Matt's point, there's obviously a big election in America about this. There's a big election coming up in Canada as well. There's clearly an election in Australia. There's a lot of opportunities for governments to plant a flag and start making privacy, compliance, and the future of our children a top priority. I think what's been interesting is the proliferation of technology, in particular social media platforms, have just taken off far ahead of any pace or cadence that governments, typically slow moving, have been able to actually get in front of and adapt to. And it's a sign of our times. You know, what we may have perceived to be more of a fad is clearly not going anywhere. It's clearly, to Matt's point, the chosen method of communication, of building community, unfortunately. I think we need to get our kids back outside, get our kids interacting in a face-to-face environment rather than through a screen. But I don't want to sound like an old curmudgeon. It is the way. It is, you know, readily accessible. Guilty of it as well. But I think what we're seeing is really governments and society catching up to technology now.
Yeah, I think we're all guilty of it to some extent. Yeah, and it's definitely here to stay. Do you agree, Matt? Do you think that other countries will follow suit?
Yeah, I think they will. I think, you know, when it first came out, obviously there was a lot of discussion about the GDPR in Europe and whether other countries would adapt that. And now we're seeing in different forms, it may not be the exact same form, but other countries are adopting those pieces of law. Similarly, obviously, with Australia, they're now looking towards adopting their EU Digital Services Act. So yeah, whether it will be in the exact same form or not, I think as soon as a country releases a piece of legislation such as this, I'm sure others will follow suit, because it's the same. We are in a globalized society and the same arguments are happening, whether it's in the US, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in Australia, whether it's in Asia. These discussions are global because these platforms themselves are global, which I think is it's a good thing, because I think obviously a lot of debate previously in terms of technology has been quite nationalized, which means that there's different levels of adoption, different hurdles for companies, businesses and people and consumers to overcome. So, you know, I don't see any harm in, you know, Australia leading the way and others following.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens and whether they follow suit. Yeah. Now on to our last story. Amazon has launched a new app called Haul in a bid to compete with low-cost retail rivals Temu and Shein. It's a mobile-only app which caps the price of products on sale at $20, equivalent to about £15. It said most products would cost less than half of the price cap, though. And the app is currently only available to customers in the US. Like Temu and Shein, Haul's business model operates with lower prices and longer waits for shipping. So I'll come to you, Matt, first on this one. With e-commerce giants like Temu and Shein under scrutiny for their business models of selling mass-produced goods for low prices, is this a wise move from Amazon?
Personally, I don't think it is. I think it just seems incredibly reactive. I think looking at what Amazon's USPs were originally for its Prime subscription model, it was the same quality goods you can buy in store, they're well priced, it's free postage if you're a subscriber, and it's all under one roof with one subscription. And I think over time, in the face of the challenge of these ultra low cost online retailers such as Temu and Shein, Amazon has been, you know, it's opened its gates to third party sellers and has therefore dropped that quality while retaining that higher price point. And now you know, in the face of this, you know, ultra cheap goods that these rivals are producing, it's now claiming that these third-party goods are now available through Amazon, through this Haul platform, at a much, much lower price than those that are on its standard Prime platform. I think consumers are going to see through that and be like, hang on, if you're selling pretty similar goods at way higher margins on Prime, how are you now able to sell them through Haul, and why aren't all your goods at that price? It's kind of like a McDonald's-ification of online retail. Obviously, McDonald's was previously known for value and convenience, and now it's struggling, obviously, with delivery being rolled out and inflation. It's now struggling with its, you know, infrastructure and identity, because it's lost that, you know, that value and convenience piece. If you're sat in store waiting ages while a delivery driver takes chips and your chips there on the side standing cold, not to be too rude to McDonald's, but I've had quite a similar analogy. But yeah, I just think it seems too reactive from Amazon rather than trying to lean in more to what its USPs originally were.
Yeah, I like that analogy. What do you think, Josh?
I totally agree. When I learned about this, I was like, what are we doing? I feel like I'm in a dystopian film here, where one company rules, or is trying to rule, all of society and provide us with our air, our oxygen, our clothes, right? Our water, our food. It feels incredibly reactive. It feels off strategy for them. I think they should focus on the things that make them great and what's resulted in their explosion, which is value and quality goods delivered quickly to your home, right? It's not that I can't get whatever product somewhere, that spatula, right? I could go to Target, I could go to Home Goods, but I have to go there, or I have to wait 3 days for Target to deliver it, or even a day. I'm actually located in the US right now, and in the area of the states that I live in, Amazon's actually delivering in the middle of the night. So I could order something at dinner time, and when I wake up to let my dog out in the morning, the package is already sitting at my front door. And I check the Ring camera, Amazon product, and it's like delivered at like 2:30 in the morning. So we're talking about, 6 to 7 hour fulfillment turnaround time. And it's only a matter of time before they start deploying a fleet of drones that are just airdropping stuff to us. I think that that's where their value is. That's where they should be focusing on, is building that infrastructure and that ability for us to get our stuff faster and more direct, and not lower quality goods.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're straying from what's made them so successful now. And Josh, do you think that this could actually help Amazon eliminate some of the competition from Temu and Shein?
By launching Haul?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you'd have to first establish an argument that Temu and Shein are competitors. Are they competitors because they're taking money away from, share of wallet from Amazon? Probably to a degree, but I imagine that the Amazon customer, like every customer today, is quite dynamic. That the user who orders McDonald's from Uber Eats or physically goes in to McDonald's also eats at a high-end restaurant, is also interested in luxury travel, but also very much wants a Temu suitcase for that trip. So I think that there's a vast continuum that the user persona lives on, and I don't think Amazon, through their vast empire of services, of products, is going to suffer if they don't come down market with Haul.
Yeah, what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily going to help them eliminate competition from Temu and Shein, unless Amazon, they've got some master plan of accelerating scrutiny into what Temu and Shein are faced with, which, anything from import tariffs to privacy regulations to deceptive trade practices to intellectual property rights. The list goes on and on, unless Amazon are trying to use Hall as a, you know, kind of Trojan horse into raising debates around that, then I don't think it's going to help eliminate competition. And I think also just looking, you know, I read through the press release on Amazon, the branding for Hall just seems absolutely horrid. Like, not that I agree at all with Shein and Temu, but if you go onto their sites, branding is simple. It's just product after product after product. All of it useless tat, but it's there. It's red, you know, one click and, oh, yes, I want that spatula. Oh, yes, I'd love that $2.99 necklace. It's all there. Whereas Hall, it just, you know, looking at the branding, it seems like it's been, you know, developed by someone who runs a Facebook group about minions. It's all crazy emoji faces and, wow, this must be cool because they've used emojis. It just seems like, yeah, that may have been cool in the late 2000s, but it's, the branding just seems horrible. So yeah, I don't think it'll help eliminate competition, but it's probably why they've been a bit more smaller scale in it's only available for Amazon. It's only available on mobile. It's only available in the US at present. I think they're dipping their toes, seeing how it works. If it does, you know, somehow take off and consumers don't question those margins, then happy days, they'll roll it out. But yeah, I think it'll be one that may be quietly sidelined in a year or two.
Yeah, that's true. It might disappear soon, and it might not even reach us here in the UK ever. So, okay, I think that's a good note to wrap up the discussion. So thanks, Matt, as always.
Thanks, Amy.
And thanks so much, Josh, for joining us today. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you to all our listeners. That was today's Mad Tech podcast.